Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening, and welcome to Eerie House Radio, that is. I'm Dale K from Spook Show. I'm here along with...
with a little bit of revenge. Dave Bickley for the weirdest, really bad movie, and Spaceship One.
I'll tell you, Dave is back here with a vengeance for sure, because not only do we have a wonderful tale from Haunting Hour, but Dave is not only hosting, but he is starring in a production that he wrote, or at least co-wrote, tonight from Radio Stage.
Now, this is what I wrote. This is what I wrote all by myself. So, it's an interesting tale, and actually... some interesting things happened in the filming of this that I'll share with that when we get closer to the time. Some things I was thinking about going into the filming, so or the, actually the recording. So we'll share that for when we get into that half of the show. I'll have my revenge on me. Woohoo! I want to tell everybody, if you didn't get a chance to listen in last night live or in the archive, go back and listen. We had some three great shows last night. The Weird Circle and Lights Out and Suspense. All three of the marvelous shows.
And, Tales About Revenge, and we continue in that vein tonight.
Yep. That's what we about. That. We certainly do.
We talked about getting even. Is there anyone you've ever wanted to get even with, Dave? You don't have to name names, just a yes or no.
You know what? I think when I was more of a kid, then I'm going to get him if that's the last thing I do. Or, you know, when I know when I started off as a dishwasher, just, you know, and there's a manager that I felt was like picking on me. I said, yeah, well, I'm going to make $1 million. And I'm going to buy this restaurant, and I'm going to make him be my dishwasher, and I'm going to yell at him, you know, but, you know, what's funny, when I was running a Taco Bell, and there was a kid, he wasn't really a real great employee, he wasn't a bad kid, but he wasn't a real great employee, and he was back there at the fryer, and I went back, and usually what I did, when I went back, and I got so frustrated, I went back to wash dishes. That's where I started. I started in restaurants as a dishwasher. I figured I'll go in as a dishwasher, I'll go out as a dishwasher. But I went back there, and I just, was really kind of ticked. And I was over there washing dishes. I looked over and said, man, when I get older, I'm going to have $1 million to buy a restaurant. I'm going to make him be a fry spider, a fry chef. You know, and I said that out loud. He just said, how did you know that's what I was thinking?
That's funny.
I'll tell you things like that. I don't think I've ever really been a person that's been out for revenge.
I've always thought about it. Never would carry it out, but always, like, there's this sinister, dark part of my mind. That what-if part of my mind, you know, that says, oh, this would be so cool. But then reality finally grabs a hold of me and says, yeah, but you probably don't want to do that. Because then, as you brought up yesterday, when the revenge is met, then what? It's got to be very deflating. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing I've learned over time, too. Usually those people that have upset me that much, you cannot compete with them. They are devious in mind to begin with. And if you try to compete with them, they'll go the next step. And it's a step you hadn't even thought of. So, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons I don't, you know, I can't beat them in that kind of a game because I don't think like that. So the best thing for me to do is just let it go.
Yeah, there's some things that are worth letting go because, like I said, once the revenge is met,
right.
You can't go back and change things. You can only learn from them. You know, if you made a mistake or someone else makes a mistake, You can't.
Right.
The time travel's not yet possible.
Yeah.
Except here on here in Erie House, but
Erie House, right?
Yeah.
The thing about revenge, if you are hell bent on revenge, one, if you get it, is that really going to satisfy you? In all the stories we've ever shown, or probably even seen on TV, it doesn't satisfy them. And the second part of that would be, if you don't try to satisfy it, but you always want revenge, it's just something that eats you alive.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. And I, and maybe there's a touch, possibly, of narcissism wrapped up in revenge. Because you've made yourself so important and if offended that you have to, I don't know. Maybe what goes through somebody's mind is they have to make themselves better. I don't know.
I don't either because like I said, it's something I just never really hung on to. I guess I'll say it here. She's gone now, but my ex-wife, you know, I had a lot of bad feelings towards her. But not because of the way she treated me, because we were both adults. It's the way she treated her children. To me, what I couldn't forgive. But she's gone now, and I'm not. So, and I didn't have to do revenge. So, I always said we got along better when she was moved three states away.
And sometimes the best revenge is well, they say success is the best revenge. Well, I think personal satisfaction is something of that too, and it's nothing that you dwell on or savor. It just happens.
If somebody's got a vendetta against you, and you show that you just go on like nothing happened, do you think that eats them alive? I would think so.
Oh, sure. And this, again, I think is where ego comes into play, because it's like, no, pay attention to me and my hurt and my pain and my offendedness, damn you. And that's the kind of stories we're bringing you tonight.
Absolutely.
Because we're like that. That's our revenge.
Right.
You know, make you listen to us. Before we begin these fine tales, tell us a little bit about The Haunting Hour. This one I'm not well educated on at all, Dave.
Well, you know, the problem with The Haunting Hour, it's one of these shows that was syndicated, and so little was actually – if it were true a network program, there would be all kinds of documentation about it here, there, and everywhere. Even shows that didn't last that long had some kind of documentation. Here's a little bit that we do have. Kind of two things about – of a Haunting Hour. One is that it's only a half hour, but calling it the Haunting Half Hour would not kind of, which would be more correct. It's not quite as scary as calling it the Haunting Half Hour. Does not sound as bad as the Haunting Hour.
I see.
Secondly, second mystery of that is that like so many of the great radio talents that labored in the background, unseen and unheralded, this show made. For the transcription service has receded into the ethers of time radio without history. That is, it's Magister Ludi of old time radio himself, John Dunning, succinctly states that on the air of the Encyclopedia of Old Radio, there were no credits, no casts, and no production crew, and all production crews are unknown. Vanished without a trace. Well, were they really there making real radio? The answer is yes, because the shows prove it. Perhaps the kind listeners might give a clue as to the talents that were involved, or were just we were just imagining it. It sounds like a plot for another Haunting Hour program. But you come through some shows like that, and they don't even Arch Obler doesn't. Give a lot of personal credits of the actors and things like that, and you can find them, and people recognize them because so many great people did work on Lights Out. But you didn't usually hear their name, except when Karloff was on, you heard his name. other shows mostly did. Hyman Brown was very good about making sure actors got their credit. You know,
yeah, Suspense was good at that too. They made sure they credited it.
Everybody, yes. Yeah. And many times, even the one we heard last night that was from 1958, they had two sound guys. They didn't call them sound effect artists. They didn't call them Foley artists. I forget the sound patterns by is what they called it. So the sound effects were called sound patterns at that point, anyway. So, but yeah, many of these that were syndicated. I'm trying to think that when you think of Boston Blackie, which was also a ZIV syndicated series, you know that I was Richard Colmar and also the guy that's on The Mysterious Traveler. He was Inspector Faraday. And I'm not even sure that we knew who Mary was. They never talked about the other people. I know a few weeks ago when we did a show, and he never got credit for it. Frank Lovejoy was in there. Oh, it was the Jeff Chandler. The Michael Shane. Not once mm-hmm. they mentioned, I don't think, Frank Lovejoy in there, but Frank Lovejoy was the husband of the wife who was being hunted. So a lot of shows just didn't do it. And then there were some people, especially like Hyman Brown, like Suspense and Escape was very good at that also. CBS Radio Workshop. A lot of your CBS shows were really good, and maybe it's a network thing, but on transcriptions, maybe they wanted you to believe that that's what it was and that's who they were.
Yeah, it could be, but accredited or not, we're lucky to have episodes the remaining of The Haunting Hour, and I don't imagine we have an original broadcast date for tonight's episode called Revenge.
I have a broadcast date, and again, it depends on what station you listen to it on, or maybe this was the first station that syndicated. It could have been. The one I have is August 11th, 1945.
No, no, stay where you are. Do not break the stillness of this moment, for this is a time of mystery, a time when imagination is free and moves forward swiftly, silently. This is The Haunting Hour. Listen, those are bells tolling in requiem for a man who has died. How did he die, you ask? Ah, listen to what happened to a girl who knew and whose mind was clouded dark with the fear of knowing. Listen to a tale of murder. It is late afternoon. Lee House is set strangely on a cliff beside the rolling sea. Autumn leaves fall, and with them the threads of night. And in a car, parked a little distance from the house at a pillared gate, sits a girl behind the wheel. Beside her stands an old man with sad and beguiling eyes.
It's a bad night, Miss Anna, to be driving a sea road.
I know, Jameson, but I must go, I must. How could I spend another night in that house? What could be keeping him?
This young man, Miss Anna, is he...
He's a good driver, Jameson. I'll be perfectly safe.
I do hope you will be, ma'am. Listen, you can hear the surf from here. How Mr. Jonathan loved the sea.
Jameson, don't. Oh, there's rain behind that wind, I bet.
Annabelle! Annabelle!
Is in my mind. Memory of him. I can still see him. Like that night a few weeks before he died. I mustn't think of it. Not now. Not now.
You can't forget me, Annabelle. Even when I'm dead, I'll live in your mind. I'll feed on your fear of my ghost.
I'd rather be dead. Jonathan, let me out of this house. Let me go.
My dear, you're too lovely for others to see. So I've no choice but to keep you within these walls.
Within this prison, you mean? Even that chauffeur is a spy. There isn't a moment of the day when I don't feel a pair of eyes watching everything I do. They even pry into my thoughts. Jonathan, if you have any kindness in your heart...
Look here. Here at the window. The ocean is white capped, far as you can see.
Why do you torture me? How can you hate me so much?
I don't, my Annabelle. And this pleading, it's no use. You'll never forget me. I'll never let you go. I'll never let you go. Miss Anna, why so pensive?
Oh, I was thinking. Remembering. Jameson, are you sure you want to be caretaker at Lee House? You won't be lonesome?
I wouldn't leave it, Miss Anna. It'd be like leaving my little girl, my daughter Amy.
You loved her very much, didn't you?
That I did. And the morning we found her at the bottom of the cliff down there in the cove was almost more than my heart could bear. But that was long ago. Look there. Reckon that's the young man coming now.
Oh, yes, it is. Goodbye, Jameson. You've been a good friend. Thank you for that. Goodbye.
Good luck, Miss Anna, wherever you go.
Jim. Oh, Jim, I thought you'd never come.
Hello, Anna. Sorry.
Here, climb in here. Take the wheel.
Okay. A few last things to do at the Hendersons. You know how it is.
Jim, hold me close.
I was so worried. I was afraid you might think I wasn't coming. And all the time running over that hill, my heart kept pounding, saying, Simpleton Jim Brandt, even late for his elopement. Well, ready to start, Mrs. Brandt? Just you wait and see what a swell honeymoon trip I've got planned for us, Mrs. Brandt.
Oh, it's so wonderful. But is it real, Jim?
What do you mean, real? Of course it's real.
Well, seems like a good dream. After the last 3 months since he died, I've lived in a nightmare since then.
But it's over now.
Over and done with. Jim, don't think me silly, but they don't exist any longer, do they?
Hmm?
I mean, people who are dead.
My heavens, no. Except in somebody's mind, maybe. Somebody who was close. A wife or a daughter like you, maybe. Especially a good-looking daughter like you.
Yes. I want to tell you something, Jim.
My, don't you sound serious, though.
I don't want to be serious. All I want to do is be close beside you.
Say, there's a road somewhere ahead that cuts off about 10 miles. Country road. We'll have to watch for it.
Remember the first day we met, Jim? That little country road?
Mm-hmm. Wasn't far from Lee House.
You just walked down that road from the Hendersons and... When I came along, you were poking at some rocks with a long stick, and I couldn't imagine what you were doing.
Oh, hey there, young lady. Would you like to see something?
See what?
Well, come here and find out. A whole nest of them down in this crevice in the rocks.
Nest of what?
Well, come and see. They won't bite you.
Oh, no. You tell me. I'd rather not look. That rattling...
Yeah, it does give them away. Well, it's a mama snake and, oh, I don't know how many chillin' in the nicest snake house you ever saw. Big fellas, too.
Oh, then you let them alone before they come out.
Oh, they'd be as scared of you as you'd be of them. Well, say, you live around here somewhere?
Yes, but I must go now.
Oh, no, wait a minute. I'm Jim Brandt, architect over at the Henderson's place. Been adding that new wing and rebuilding the stable.
I heard about it.
Where do you live?
At the Lee House.
I've been on lots of walks around here, but I've never seen you before. How come?
I don't often go out.
Say, you must be Mr. Lee's daughter, huh? Or has he got a daughter?
I really can't talk with you, Mr. Brandt. I've got to hurry home.
Oh.
Goodbye.
Oh, hey, Miss Lee. Maybe I'll see you around here again sometime.
First time we met. Remember?
You know, you were mighty strange that day.
I was afraid.
Afraid? Afraid of what?
Oh, I don't know. I guess because all the days were so full of him. Like the day he disappeared.
What do you mean, Anna?
He went sailing alone that day. Then suddenly the squall blew up, the wind and the waves, and nobody ever saw him again.
Annabelle! Annabelle!
Yes, Jim?
Annabelle, Lee!
Huh?
Annabelle!
I didn't hear what
Annabelle.
You said.
I didn't.
But you did. You said my name.
Oh, you were just half asleep, that's all. Hey, what's that? Doggone it, Anna. We got a flat tire.
Don't stop, Jim. Don't stop here.
We have to. I can't ride the rim.
But there's nothing to fix it with, Jim. Let's go on, please. I don't care about the tire.
Anna, what's the matter? You think I'm going to ruin a perfectly good... Hey, look. There's a little house up there. I'll bet he's got a jack. Hey, up there. Now, darling, don't look like that.
What's the matter?
Hello. Sorry to bother you. Have you got a jack I can borrow? Flat tire.
Sure. Hey, son, go get the jack out of the car.
You see, Anna, we'll have it fixed in no time. Oh, darling, don't look peeved.
You people headed for the turnpike?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
You're going the wrong way. Shortcut's back about a mile.
Oh, you mean we're past it?
Well, how do there, ma'am? Didn't see you at first.
How'd you do?
I don't guess you remember me. I come over and helped your husband's man, Jameson, fix the gardens this spring.
Jim.
It's too bad he's lost in that squall, Miss Lee. It's a fine gentleman, Mr. Jonathan was. It grieved us all to see your husband go like that.
Jim, you turn back. You're taking me home.
You were Jonathan's wife, Anna.
Don't take me back. I didn't lie to you, Jim. I was going to tell you...
When? After we got married? After...
No, I was going to tell you tonight. That second time I saw you after Jonathan disappeared, you asked my name. Even then you thought I was his daughter and something wouldn't let me say I was his wife. He was so much older, Jim. Nearly 20 years.
How long were you married?
4 years. 4 dreadful years. I never loved him.
Anna.
I can't help it. He kept me like a prisoner in that gloomy house, watching me every minute. Oh, Jim, I do love you. Don't take me back.
It's all right, Anna. Don't get upset. Just be quiet for a few minutes. What's the matter? What are you looking back for?
Something's following us. I can feel it, Jim.
On this lonely road?
You're sorry you ever came.
Oh, Anna, stop it.
Say you're not sorry. Say you forgive me for deceiving you.
I do forgive you.
Then everything's all right, Jim. Don't hate me.
Oh, Anna, no. Let's not talk about it. Not now.
Yes, let's forget. Let's talk of something else. Look, it's beginning to rain. Night's come.
Yes. Listen to it on the roof. Seems to be saying your name. There's a poem written about you. Know that?
Yes.
Poe's. I used to know it by heart. It was many and many a year ago in a kingdom by the sea.
That a maiden there lived, whom you may know.
That's it.
By the name of Annabel Lee. And this maid, she lived with no other thought than to love and be loved by me.
Say, you know it too.
Heard it a million times. I know it all, every syllable.
Annabel.
Jim, listen.
What?
It was many and many a year ago in a kingdom by the sea.
Jim, look.
What is it?
On the road in the lightning. A man in the rain.
Anna, it's not anybody.
But you don't know. He was in the house from that first day he disappeared. I could hear him even before that. Out at sea, calling my name.
Oh, Anna, you've got to stop this.
But, Jim.
You're just imagining it, I tell you.
Jim, I've got to tell you. I can't go on without telling you the truth.
What truth?
I killed him.
Anna.
I killed Jonathan. I killed my husband.
What are you saying?
Now you know. Now you can take me back to Lee House. You can take me back home. Back to him.
Well, got a young lady in a bit of fear here.
Yep, yep, and keeps hearing the voice of her ex-dead husband, whatever it is.
Mm. Who we just found out she killed.
Or did she? Because since we're here, did she really kill him, or is he truly a ghost? We'll have to wait for the second half. A couple more notes here about this. Of course, actually, this was an NBC production, but it was produced for the ZIV was giving them such fits by producing so many wonderful and good quality programs that they started their own transcription service. NBC, RRD for NBC Record, but this show here, kind of like CBS Radio Mystery Theater, during the 70s, the Haunting Hours did not limit itself to a narrow definition of horror and explored a wide range of themes. Since they were all part of a network, the producers had no trouble hiring the most talented radio role players to act on the program. One casualty of syndication, so that was from the syndication, was the acting credits. The script of a live network feed had the announcer reading the cast and production credits near the end of the broadcast. But the syndication discs would be shipped with production notes for the local announcer to read, along with the local sponsor messages. Since the sponsor messages were paying the bills, cast credits were often ignored. So that's what happened there. The people got paid, but this was a network show, so I'm sure somewhere something must have been taken down. But it wasn't technically made for NBC. It was made for their transcription service to be sold independently to whatever station would buy it.
That's kind of wild. And that's hard on actors because, you know, part of their ability to earn comes from their name. And
it comes from
nobody
recognition
knows what you're doing. Yeah.
Right. The more people hear your name, the more you'll get probably get work. You know, your William Conrad, your Frank Lovejoys, your so many of those names that are so familiar. You recognize them and you heard them. But when you hear a guy that, I know, I think I know who that guy is, but then you never hear it at the end of the show. Wait a minute here. That isn't right.
But that's what we have here with Haunting Hour, and it's still a very, very thrilling show.
Yes. And what did we do? What did they do? They went back to Poe, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
When in doubt, go to Poe. with his poem Annabelle Lee, yes.
Indeed, and let's go ahead and finish up the episode Revenge from The Haunting Hour.
Jonathan Lee is dead. And our story begins one night a few months later when Anna, a young woman who has lived in seclusion for 4 years at Lee House, is to be married to Jim Brandt, a young architect. Jameson, the old caretaker, sees her off in the station wagon. And as Anna and Jim drive along, she confesses that she was Jonathan's wife, that she herself murdered him. Her mind is distraught with a terrible fear that the dead man is somehow among the undead, that he is waiting for her.
Oh, Anna, I don't believe you. What are you saying?
That I killed him. I planned to kill him.
No, you couldn't have.
I had to tell you. Because Jim, somehow he's not dead. You said the dead only live in somebody's mind. And they do. They also live beyond the mind.
Oh, Anna, please.
That's why I couldn't wait to tell you. Calmly and sanely in the light of day. Jonathan's waiting somewhere for
listen.
Me.
Now, Anna, listen.
Don't you see, Jim? I thought I could run away from him. I thought I could send him out to sea and he'd never come back again.
Here, I'm going to stop the car.
Oh, no. Jim, please, no. If you loved me, take me on.
And tell me why. Why on earth did you do this?
I had to.
Tell me why.
That poem you mentioned. He used to say it to me. He used to love it. I'll hear him till I die. His voice droning out the words. Sometimes, Jim, he'd lie awake and I'd hear him whispering it over and over. I could see, mournful and sad. When I started working in the village at the library, 5 years ago that was, he used to come in and ask for Bo. At first I thought he was just a lonely old man. Lonely because his wife was dead. That day, late in October, he asked me if I'd take the job of cataloging his library. It was right after my mother died. I was alone. He used to come in that big, dark room and ask to help. He used to say, "You're working too hard, Annabelle. Come for a sail with me." I went once or twice. He'd look at me with a strange kind of laughter in his eyes. Then he asked me to marry him. He asked me a dozen times. At last I did. And then 4 years in that house with the sea always pounding, the wind crying in the cove.
But what did he do, Anna? What could have made you...
He was going to kill me. Just as he killed the first Mrs. Lee.
What? He murdered her?
Oh, Jim. I had to do it. From the day I married him, I wasn't allowed out of that house. Except when he went along. That afternoon I met you. He'd gone for a sail and I'd planned to run away.
Yes, you did have a suitcase, I remember.
But when I met you, I was sure you were one of his spies, so I had to go back again. That night, I went to his room. He was sitting in the huge chair by the fire. He looked up and smiled that grim smile.
Did you want something, Annabelle?
Jonathan, you loved me once. I had pity for you once, if not love. Oh, listen to me, please.
But you said it all before, hundreds of times.
I couldn't say it enough, Jonathan. Please, please let me go. I'll do anything you say if you'll only let me go.
But, my dear, when I met you, didn't my money please your eye? Isn't it enough to have that?
It wasn't your money, Jonathan. It was pity for you. Only pity. I thought it was love.
Where is your pity now? No, Annabelle. I couldn't let you go. You'd find pity for another man and grow to believe that you loved him, too. How could I bear such a thing to happen? No. You see, your pity, as you call it, is only for me. Until the day you die.
What do you mean? Jonathan, what do you mean?
Soon, I'll let you go, Annabelle. Someday soon, you must go for a sail with me.
Screamed and ran from him. My mind was sick with terror. What was I to do? The house was like a prison, and everywhere I turned were shadows and gloom, and Jonathan was part of it all. But I had one friend, and he'd come to me when I needed him most.
Santa, don't turn on the light.
Jameson, where are you?
Here beside you. I've been waiting in your room because I had to see you without him knowing it.
Oh, Jameson, you've got to help me. I've got to get out of here.
No, Miss Anna. That's what he wants you to do. And that's why I came to stop you from going.
Why?
He'd follow you. He'd find you.
You heard what he said?
I've heard it before. The other Mrs. Lee. She begged him to let her go. Time and again she begged him. And one day, she took a boat from the cove.
He said she was lost in the sea.
Yes, Miss Anna. But Mr. Jonathan followed in a skiff, and then she never came back. He murdered her.
Jameson.
It's the truth.
I believe you. I do.
Then wait and plan. I'll help, but he mustn't know about it. Tomorrow, we'll talk tomorrow, if he goes sailing again.
Sailing? You're right, Jameson. I won't run away. I know now what I have to do. I know now what I must do. So that night, I made my plan. The next day, he did go sailing. And that was when I caught them. With a little cord noose I made myself. I lay on the rocks for a long time, looking down, waiting till I could get the cord over their heads.
Caught what?
The rattlesnakes you showed me that day.
Yeah.
I caught them and took them down to the cove in a box. And that night, I put them in his boat in a coil of rope. I left them there.
Oh, Anna, how terrible.
The next day, he went sailing again. He didn't see them at first. The motion of the boat and a sharp sting on his leg. And waiting in the dark, I could picture him. Fighting, drawing back, turning loose of the boom, climbing out of the pit. And the squall came. And he was gone.
Oh, Anna, what are we going to do?
But I had to, Jim.
And it wasn't because of me.
I'd only seen you once. I didn't know you weren't somebody he'd hired to watch me till I saw you again and again after he was dead. Oh, Jim.
Anna, look out. Hold on. It's a cliff. We're hanging over the edge, Anna. Get out, quick. Here, take my hand. This side, Anna, this side. That was close. You all right?
Yes, I'm all right.
Look, we nearly went over into the sea. Golly, we'd both have been killed.
Jim! Jim!
What, Anna?
We're back where we started. There's the house and the cliff.
What?
You brought me back.
Anna, you know I didn't.
Jim, look! Who is it, Jim? Yonder on the road.
I don't know.
It's Jonathan. He's walked up from the sea. Oh, let me go, Jim. Let me go.
Oh, it's only some man. Anna, come back here. Come back.
Hey, down there. What's the trouble?
Quick, man. Help me stop her.
Where'd she go?
I'm Jameson. We had an accident, Jameson. She's gotten some crazy notion in her head about a ghost. Look, she's running across the lawn.
Down to the sea path. Hurry. Miss Anna. Miss Anna. It's me, Jameson.
Oh, Jameson. It's you. It's you.
Oh, Anna, where were you running to?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, my darling. You frightened us nearly to death.
It was only me on the road, man.
I thought I...
She's shivering, sir. Here. Take my coat, Miss Anna. It's Providence that brought you back tonight.
Why, Jameson?
There's nothing to say, Jameson. Jim, take me to the house.
But when Jonathan sailed away that day, the snakes weren't in the boat. I took him out. You see, he could have heard their rattles. And anyway, sir, I couldn't have Miss Anna do such a thing.
James, you mean...
I couldn't have her do it, sir, when rightly the job was mine.
What you're trying to say...
With my daughter Amy, I was thinking of how Mr. Jonathan drove her to love him like she did. And how he would smile at her in that laughing way, so that she'd jump from the rocks here down to the sea.
And that was why...
So, that day, before he went for his last sail, I cut the rigging ropes. And when the wind took the canvas strong, as it does when you ride the swells, they snapped. And I stood here on the cliff and watched the boom fly free, and down he went beneath it.
Oh, Jim.
How could I watch him murder you, Miss Anna? As he'd murdered my Amy.
Oh, you're free of it, Anna, now. Don't you see? It was only the fear in your mind.
I've got a fire going in the library, Miss Anna.
I'll take her in, Jameson.
I'll go see if I can get your car off the cliff.
Oh, no, Jameson. Let it alone. We don't care about the car.
Oh, but you two can be on your way again when the rain blows over.
Come along in, Anna. You're cold now. Here, pull the coat around you.
He did it for me, Jim.
Are you all right now?
Now I am. Jim, look. What's Jameson doing?
He's climbing in the car.
Stop him, Jim.
What? He started the motor.
But the car's hanging over the edge of the rocks. Jim, stop him. It's toppling. It's toppling over the cliff. Oh, Jim, how awful. It went over the cliff.
Down to the sea in the cove.
He did it all for me.
And for me too, darling. But he's made everything all right, Anna. He's made everything all right.
shadows and stillness, mystery weaves a spell of strangest fascination, charging the mind with doubt and fear. For mystery is a strange companion, a living memory.
I'd say for its period, an intensely scary show.
Yeah, and one thing about this that the Weird Circle didn't have is they had a considerable more sound effects throughout than what the, you know, they had the sound of the sea at the beginning, the end, and at the middle break of at the Weird Circle. But that was, there weren't a lot of sound effects. There were a lot of sound effects in this one to fit right in, I thought.
It did, and it certainly helped carry the story. This was quite a chiller.
Yeah. It's just amazing what, as we've talked, what revenge or supposed revenge can do for you. I mean, this gal definitely was haunted, that's for sure.
Yes, she was. But did we learn anything from this? Or no?
I didn't.
Nah, me neither.
You have to use, you know, hey, use your credits, buddy. The Actors Guild would insist upon that. That's
right,
something new.
Here's what we learned. I have no idea.
Yep. But
lots of revenge. And Dave, I've been kind of anxiously waiting for our next feature. We have a little something special for you.
Yeah, before we even get into the story, I have a little promo I put together. I think it's back to either at the end of 2000 or the beginning of 2001, as I was trying to help get the promotion for the show. A little 3-minute clip that you're going to share right here, right, Dale?
As soon as I find it.
It's in a part one of one. Part one of one.
Yeah, I've had a little jumbling going on here quite by accident with a sticky mouse. So here it is to give you a good idea of what Radio Stage was all about.
Oh, that's when I looked up and I saw a man lying in the street about 30 feet away. His body was barely lit up by the street lamp. If I was tired and drunk before, I certainly was awake and sober by then. I stared at the body as it lay in the street bleeding. I thought about running over and trying to help him. Then I thought about my wife and my son. Mostly, I thought about myself. I saw what looked like headlights coming from back behind me, and fear raced through me. So I got in my car, and I ran.
Fine by me if Steve wants to die. Lauren, I don't want my husband to die, especially for the likes of you.
We have to come up with some fair way to decide who it's going to be.
I vote for Steve. He wants to die anyway.
This isn't a popularity contest. We have to decide on something that's fair.
Why is everybody looking at me? I don't want to die.
No one's looking at you, Betty.
Yes, you are. You all are. And I know what you're thinking.
Polly, please give this some thought.
Why? So that you could deceive me some more?
I was gonna tell you.
Sure. I've gotta go. I'll be back in a little while.
Promise me you won't sell out.
We'll see. I don't know yet.
I love you.
I'll be back. Carl and Eddie are here.
I really do love you.
Look, Mary, I know this whole thing is none of my business, but you have been running for so long, and now you are so close to finding what you've been seeking. If you don't take the chance now, you probably never will, and you'll spend the rest of your life wondering what it might have been like. You've been searching a good part of the country for the answer, and it's been right here all along.
How do you find the answer when you're not even sure what the question is?
I took a quick shower and went straight to bed. I was exhausted, but it seemed like forever before I finally drifted off to sleep. And the last thing I remember hearing was that eerie laughter of a man I'd never met. A man dead for 23 years.
A sad tale. One of many, I know, having run this store for so many years. Perhaps you'll stop in one day, and I'll tell you another tale. But for now, I must put out my closed sign and turn out the lights. It's time for me to go. Till then, take care.
Ooh, Dave, I'm telling you. Good stuff.
Thanks for liking my eerie laughter there, Foggs. That was me. That's one coming up for when we do reunions. I have a weekend for on reunions. That's usually what, in May or June type thing?
Sure, so we shall
see what we do. And I have a whole weekend set on reunions, and that is one of the shows included in there. It's called A Game of Chicken. Interesting show. I really like that one. So there you go. So
it sounds intriguing, and you're whetting my appetite even further for your radio stage presentation for tonight. That kind of takes us from revenge mode right into the holidays.
Right, with revenge as the motive for the holiday, with a special interesting story I penned called All I Want for Christmas is Revenge. Interesting thing about this show, too, it's the first time I ever used children as actors in the show. And we're talking, I think one was 7 and one was 10.
Wow.
And so what I did with those two is I actually had them come in the day before everybody else, and I recorded all of their stuff and then edited that in to the main part. The second part was a guy who had always loved the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, wanted so much to be a part of the radio stage that I put him in. What I didn't mention is this man was blind since birth. He wanted to be in our radio play. And so I sent him the script. He had it put into Braille, but he had a hard time following it. So what we did with his parts as we went along, basically we stopped each time and we had him, he read his line and then he said his line. And then in the editing, I was able to take out all the reading and it came to the saying, you're not going to be able to tell that when you hear that, how, it occurs in the first half of the show. So I'll just let you. But that was two different experiences I had putting this particular story together.
Dave, that is awesome. That is awesome. And let's hear the beginning and jump right in to radio stage.
From December 25th, 2004.
We'll be back!
From great stories to tales of intrigue, we present WCRS Radio Stage. Join us as we take you on a journey to the center of your imagination through radio drama. Today, a story by David E. Binkley. That sound tells us there's only 15 seconds to curtain time. So get comfortable in your chair as we take you to Studio X and WCRS Radio Stage presents All I Want for Christmas is Revenge. Christmas is not always a time of joy and happiness. Sometimes it's a time of emptiness, loneliness, and bitter memories. And every once in a while, it becomes a time to strike back. A time for revenge.
Look at this living room. What a mess. There's more toys here in this room than any six-year-old girl has a right to have. I wish Danny would stop bringing them home for her.
Tiffany, come get your toys.
I will in a second, Mommy.
You'll be here in half a minute or else there won't be any room to put up the Christmas tree. And if there's no room for a Christmas tree, then Santa won't bother to stop by tonight.
No, Santa. I'm coming, Mommy.
I bet you will, now. Oh, to be a child at Christmas time. Who am I kidding? I have more fun than Tiffany does. Just seeing her face light up on Christmas morning makes me happier than I ever was as a child. If only I could get Danny to share in that joy. All year round, he's such a fun person to be with, except on Christmas. On Christmas, there's something that makes him so solemn, so far away from us. Maybe if he just got it out in the open, maybe he could. There's nothing I can do about that until Danny's ready to open up. Here it is, the day before Christmas, and where is he? Driving his sales force. And if I don't stop daydreaming, I'll never get my own mess cleaned up and the tree put together. Sometimes I think I'm worse than Tiffany. Now, who could that be? Oh, maybe it's that dollhouse furniture Danny ordered at the last minute. I really didn't think it would be here in time.
I'm coming!
Merry Christmas! I'm sorry. I was expecting someone else.
Mrs. Frankel?
Yes.
Mrs. Daniel Frankel?
Yes, I'm Nancy Frankel.
Mrs. Frankel, I'm Bradley Adler from Children's Services. Here are my credentials.
Children's Services? Would you like to come in?
Yes, thank you.
What is it I can do for you, Mr.
Bradley Adler? My name doesn't mean anything to you?
Bradley Adler? No, I'm sorry. Should it mean something to me?
I believe that I may have known your husband many years ago. I thought that he may have mentioned my name to you.
Danny and I have only been married for 7 years. He's never told me anything about his life before we met. It just never seemed important. Oh, I see. Danny has promised you something for the Children's Services Christmas party or something. I wish he had told me. You scared me half out of my...
I'm not here for a donation, Mrs. Frankel.
Then just why are you here?
Visits like these are never easy.
Well, you're certainly not making it any easier. Why don't you just say what you have to say?
Very well. There's been a report of child abuse, and I'm afraid that I'm going to have to take your daughter out of this environment until such time that it is proven to be safe.
Proven to be safe from what? This whole thing is ridiculous. Just what is this? Some sort of a mistake?
This is no mistake. Here's my court order.
But I don't understand any of this. I think I need to contact our lawyer.
You do what you need to do, but in the meantime, I will have to take your daughter with me.
Look, you can't just barge in here and take Tiffany away.
I'm afraid that this piece of paper says that I can. So are you going to make your phone call, or am I going to have to use it first to call the sheriff's department to help me enforce this court order? You can make this easy or difficult. What's it going to be?
But it's Christmas Eve.
This is about the safety of your daughter, Mrs. Frankel.
Oh, all right.
Tiffany, I need you here.
This whole thing is ridiculous.
I assure you, this is a very serious matter.
Tiffany. This is Mr. Adler. You're going to go with him. Daddy and I are going to come pick you up real soon.
If that's what you want.
Here, let's zip up your coat. Now, give me a kiss.
It's time, Mrs. Frankel.
Be good, baby. We'll see you real soon.
So if we optimize these leads, I think we can still beat sales projection for the quarter. What do you think, Bill?
Well, it's not impossible. We're right on the edge of projections, and there is a week before the quarter closes out.
But?
But it's a holiday week, a short week. Most offices we contact will have a skeleton crew, if anyone at all.
Jan?
Look, Dan, everybody in this company knows that the projection was beyond attainable. We walloped last year's quarterly sales. That's what's most important in the company's eyes.
So, because we did better than last year, we should just roll over and play dead?
Hey, who's playing dead? I did a week's worth of presentations in 2 days to squeeze out my last sale.
Let's face it, Dan. We've all been pushing the envelope just to get where we are.
Look, there's four of us in this department. If each of us can pull in just one more good sale, we can still beat projection. We've still got 1 week left in this quarter. Let's give it a shot.
We can give it a shot.
Great. Now let's get out there and make something happen.
Well, this Santa has to assemble a bicycle and a computer stand between 10 p.m. and when everyone gets up in the morning. You're giving us tonight off, aren't you, Mr. Scrooge?
Pah! Humbug!
In case nobody but me is watching the clock, the Christmas party has already started over in accounting. Coming, Jim?
Yeah, I'll be down in a minute.
I'll see everyone at the punch bowl. Last one in's a rotten egg.
Lead the way, Bill.
You were pretty quiet in the meeting, Jim.
Well, what do you want me to say? I agree with Bill. We had a heck of a quarter. What's so bad about missing an unrealistic goal?
Because I think we can make it.
Why? So they can give us an even more impossible projection for next year?
You're probably right.
Besides, you're the only one in the last 3 years to get a sale between Christmas and New Year. I've been selling twice as long as you have. I haven't figured out how you do it.
Maybe we just don't try hard enough.
And maybe it's just the wrong week to sell. You know, Dan, you push yourself all year long. But this time of year, you go even harder. It's Christmas. Why don't you just give yourself a break?
Maybe because it's Christmas that I can't take a break. It's been a long time since I've been able to enjoy the Yuletide.
There's one way to start. Come on down to the party. I'll buy you a drink.
You know I don't drink.
Well, come on down to the party anyway. I'm sure they've had enough to drink to make even your jokes sound funny.
And just what's wrong with my jokes?
Saved by the bell. I'll get it. Thompson and Durst, sales office. Oh, sure, he's here. Just a second. It's Nancy, Dan. She sounds pretty excited. Hey, I'll see you down in accounting.
All right. Hey, hon.
It's Tiffany, Danny. They came and took her, and no one knows where she is.
What are you talking about? Who came and took her? Slow down and tell me what's going on.
A man came from Children's Services with a warrant to take Tiffany. But when I called them, they told me there was no such order made, and if there were, the police would have come along with him. You know, in case there would be any trouble. But I didn't know anything about this, so I sent Tiffany with him. And nobody knows where she is.
You let her go without seeing his credentials?
He had the warrant, and I saw his identification. The Children's Services said they never heard of him. Besides, he said he was a friend of yours.
A friend of mine? What did he say his name was?
He said he was Bradley Adler.
Bradley Adler? Oh, my God! After all these years? It can't be.
Who is he, Dan?
He's not my friend, Nancy. He's my ghost of Christmas past. Have you called the police?
Yes, they're on the way. But I really need you here.
I'll be there as soon as I can.
Where are you going, Danny?
I may have an idea where she is, but I'll have to go alone.
Dan!
If I'm right, it's the only way. And if I'm wrong, well, the police will be working on their angles.
But Dan!
Everything will be all right, hon. I promise.
Okay, Dan.
I hope to God I can keep that promise.
we going?
We're going to Circleville.
I've never been there before.
Why are you taking her there, Daddy?
What do you mean? I'm not your daddy.
You're the only daddy I ever knew.
Tina? It is you. But that's impossible. You're dead.
Will doing something to her make things better?
Things can never be better again.
Doing something to her can't bring me back. Why are you doing this?
Because I have to. I've been waiting 16 years for this moment.
16 years to hurt someone you don't even know?
Oh, I know him all right. And he needs to know how it feels to lose what I lost.
Is revenge worth losing everything?
When I lost you, I lost everything. Everything! Revenge is all I have left.
It doesn't have to be that way, Daddy.
You don't understand. This moment is the only thing that's kept me going all these years.
You have to let go for me, Daddy. You have to let go. You have to let go. You have to let go.
Tina!
Are you okay, mister?
Yeah. I was just thinking.
Who's Tina?
What?
You called out her name.
Tina is my daughter.
How old is she?
She's 6 years old.
Just like me. Maybe we can play together.
Maybe you will, kid. Maybe you will.
I am never, ever, ever getting in a car with you.
You're not.
A touch of Peter Lorre in you, sir. creeps me out. Wow, this is quite some story. Potential for a heinous activity is like right there, and in one hand, it feels like, oh, he's not going to do nothing, but then maybe he is.
Never know.
Very good writing, very good portrayals in this, Dave. Holy cow.
Jim, who was in the office, who stayed back behind and answered the phone with the wife calling. That's the guy that was blind, and you never can tell what we did with that to make that come out like that, I'm telling you. So,
nice editing. The kids are doing a fine job. Don't tell me you had to shoot a dog to make him cry or something.
No, I did not. I did not.
This isn't Hal Roach Studios, you know.
No. And plus, the kids haven't even cried yet.
Very cute. A good little actor too.
Yes,
in this.
Yes. Actually, I think the one was about 5 years old, the youngest one. The older one was Dave Crawford's stepdaughter, and the younger one was one of the gals that her daughter, who helped out at the bingo hall there, because there was a bingo inside the building we were in.
Ah.
I was looking for some children here. You know, the problem with that little five-year-old, she was so stinking articulate. I was afraid she wouldn't sound like a little kid, you know?
Yeah.
but it did. We spent a good hour with their parts. And, of course, there's more coming up. But
I'm really impressed because that must have taken some direction. You know, I having done my show with my own kids, sometimes it's hard to keep them on focus and on point, you know, to whatever it is you're getting done. But this came out really nice, and that just speaks to not only your ability to direct them, but the kids themselves.
Yeah, they wanted
nice,
and they wanted it to be as good as it could be, and that's the effort that I think everybody has in all of these radio stages. There's, I can only think of one time I had a problem, and she actually is a talented actress, but she just had to fight over every stinking thing. She's on Facebook, and she's friends with several friends I have. I will not mm-hmm. Facebook friend her. I can't do it. I did a couple of radio stages with her in it, and
yeah.
After the second one, I was so disgusted. I couldn't do one the next month. I was that upset.
Wow.
It came out fine. Everybody loves it. But, man, it was just such a stinking headache. When we get to air that one, I'll tell you some stories about that one.
Whoa. Anyway. That's true gossip. I love it. Radio stage gossip. This is an amazing series you put together here. And, you know, we've had others here before. This one, this one's really got the frights going.
When a guy says that revenge is all he has left, you know, that's the thing that kept him going for 16 years since his daughter died.
Yep, and he has someone else's daughter in his clutches.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty scary stuff, especially, again, with a kid or a defenseless animal or something, it's always worse when they're the victim or potential victim. We'll find out which. And the conclusion here of All I Want for Christmas is Revenge.
Mrs. Frankel?
Yes?
My name's Detective Sean Jackson.
It's been over an hour since I called the police. Where is my daughter?
Well, that's what we're trying to determine. I just need to ask you a few questions.
You police have been asking me questions ever since you got here. How is that going to help find my daughter?
Well, the more we know about Bradley Adler, the quicker we're going to be able to find him, and the quicker we're going to be able to recover your daughter.
I just don't understand why he would take Tiffany. We don't have that much money, but he can have it all, as long as he brings my baby back.
Well, I'm afraid it's not about money, Mrs. Frankel.
How can you say that? Why do you keep hanging around here when you should be out looking for my daughter?
We're doing everything we can. Now, can you tell us where your husband is, Mrs. Frankel?
I don't know. He said that he might know where Adler was going when I talked to him on the phone, but I haven't heard from him since. I've been trying to call him on his cell phone, but he's either got it shut off or else he just won't answer it.
Well, keep trying to call him. If he picks up, we'll be able to trace where he's at and we'll get to him before anything happens.
Before anything happens to who?
Well, that part I'm not sure about. To be honest with you, Mrs. Frankel, you could have saved me a great deal of time. If you would have told us about your husband's relationship with Adler when we first arrived, we could have gotten a lot closer to him than we are right now. I have a great deal of trouble getting this information on Christmas Eve.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Do you mean to tell me that you don't know about the history between Bradley Adler and your husband?
Until he stood on my doorstep, I had never seen or heard of that man before in my life.
Well, if you don't know, then maybe I shouldn't be the one to tell you.
Look, Detective, my daughter was taken from my home, and my husband seems to be missing as well. If you know anything about this affair, you'd better clue me in.
All right. But remember, you asked me to tell you. This all took place 16 years ago on this very day. Your husband was a top sales executive for Finch & Broderick, a manufacturing firm down in Circleville. It seems that he had a bit too much to drink at the company Christmas party that afternoon.
That's hard to believe. I've never even seen Danny take a drink.
Well, probably not. Things like this either cure a man of his drinking or he ends up drinking himself to death. Well, anyway, Daniel made it to his car and he headed to his apartment. On the way there, he struck and he killed Tina Adler, who was playing outside with her friends.
Oh, my God!
Well, there was some evidence that the kids were running around in the streets. But when the police arrived on the scene, your husband blew a 1.8 on the breathalyzer. He was definitely impaired, and the fact that he killed a 6-year-old girl didn't help matters.
Tiffany is 6.
Well, the jury had no choice but to convict him of vehicular homicide. Not that he put up much of a defense. He got an 8-year sentence.
I can't believe Danny was in prison.
Well, he spent the entire 8 years there, and he never even attempted to get parole. Apparently, he's been a model citizen ever since.
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
Your husband never said anything about this?
When we met just over 7 years ago, we made a pact never to ask each other about our lives before we met.
A pact?
It was really Danny's idea. Everything has gone along so well that after a while it seemed like we had always been together. And then Tiffany came along and everything was so perfect. And now I don't know where she is or what's happening to her.
Well, we're doing everything we can, and I'm sure your husband is too.
Wherever you are, Danny, please be careful.
We've been riding for a long time, mister.
Some of us have been riding longer than others.
I'm sorry, mister. I don't understand.
I'm not so sure I understood it myself.
Then why did you say it?
I don't know, kid. Sometimes grown-ups say things and do things that just don't make any sense. Don't worry, we'll be there soon.
Be where soon?
Oh, just a place.
Will my daddy be there?
It's possible.
Why are you taking us there, Daddy? I don't want to go back there. Especially not tonight.
That's why I have to go there, Tina. Especially tonight.
Are you going to hit her with your car?
I don't know what I'm going to do. But I have to do something, Tina. I have to do it for you.
But hurting her won't help me.
Then I'm doing it for me. You're trying to confuse me. Don't talk to me anymore.
But I didn't say anything.
What? Oh, I must have been daydreaming. But it doesn't matter. When we turn the next corner, we'll be there.
What do we do now?
Now we wait for the right time. It has to be the exact same time. So, he did figure it out.
Can I go home now?
Just stay in your seatbelt, kid. Your father and I have some unfinished business to deal with first. I've got the keys and your door's locked, so don't bother trying to get out. So you made it, Frankel. I thought maybe you would forget where it happened.
I've been here a million times in my mind. I will never forget what I did and where it happened. You're not the only person's life that was changed on that night, Adler.
So, would you like me to feel sorry for you?
I don't expect you to feel sorry for me, but I do have to live with it nonetheless.
Live with it? Live with it? Tina can't live with it, can she? She can't live with it because you killed her. The only way for you to live with it like I do is when you go through what I did. Only then will you truly understand. You sure picked a funny way to plead for your daughter's life, Frankel.
I don't have to plead for my daughter's life.
Why not?
Because you don't really want to kill her. She's done nothing to you. I have. It's me you want, not her.
I've waited 16 years for this moment, Frankel.
That's a long time.
I would have waited 60 if that is what it would take for you to share my burden. But I don't have to wait any longer. It comes to an end. Right here, right now.
Well, then, this is for you.
What is that? A gun? You've got to be kidding. You don't need a gun to kill me. You killed part of me when you struck down Tina with your car. The rest of me died when I watched my wife die from cancer less than a year later.
I never knew about your wife.
She could have beat it, but after losing Tina and watching how it ate away at me day after day, She didn't even try to fight it. She didn't even try. She just let it happen. So, if you want to kill me with that gun of yours, you better point it at my head and not at my heart, because my heart died a long time ago.
I said the gun was for you. You let Tiffany go, and I'll give you this gun. My life for hers. It's really me you want anyway.
Let her out of the car so the two of you can just run away?
I didn't run away after the accident. I didn't run away from the trial. And I didn't run away from prison. And I won't run away now. The only thing I've ever tried to run away from is myself. So, what do you say?
Let her go, Daddy. I like her.
Well?
Please, Daddy.
So I have a choice to be shot by you or to shoot you? I think I like the second option better.
Thank you.
Let's get one thing straight, Frankel. I'm doing this for Tina, not for you.
Understood.
Okay, kid. Out of the car.
Daddy, I was so scared.
Everything is going to be all right. Just go wait in the car for me.
But I don't want to leave you.
I still have to finish things here. Go wait in the car where it's warmer. And use my cell phone to call your mother so she knows you're all right. She's been trying to call.
Well?
All right. Here you go.
You're either the most honest man I ever met or the stupidest. Just handing me the gun like that.
I'm just a father trying to protect his daughter. Just the way you would have if you could have. You'll make sure that someone comes and gets her before she freezes to death?
Deal is a deal. Now, let's see how well this gun of yours works.
Ah!
So, you really had a loaded gun and you didn't shoot me. I thought you were bluffing. But I'm not. First shot was in your arm, the next one will be in your heart.
No more, Daddy. Don't shoot him again.
Well, what are you waiting for? Are you going to listen to your daughter for once?
What are you talking about?
Tina. She's standing between us. She just asked you not to shoot me again.
You can see her too?
You tell him, Tina.
I've talked to Mr. Frankel lots of times.
But why?
The first time she talked to me was just before my trial. I was really depressed about the accident and was thinking about killing myself.
I told him that one death was enough. And then we just talked about things until he wasn't thinking about killing himself anymore. After that, sometimes I visited Mr. Frankel and we talked.
Talked about what?
Mostly about you. You're the reason Tina's still here. She's afraid to leave you alone. You might do something like what you're doing right now.
I didn't realize.
So what's it gonna be? A bullet through my heart? Or you can do what a 6-year-old girl did 16 years ago and forgive me?
You can't expect me just to give up 16 years of hatred. It isn't that easy.
Daddy, you once told me that doing the right thing isn't always the easy thing to do. Do this and let me rest.
You better take your gun back, Frankel.
Thanks.
I guess I'll go to the police station and turn myself in.
What for? All you did was bring my daughter out here to me and then my gun went off when I was showing it to you. I already wiped your fingerprints off the gun.
Why are you doing this?
It's Christmas. A time for new beginnings. And I don't know of any two people who need new beginnings more than we do.
Today's program featured Joe Kleon as Danny Frankel, Leslie Kemple as Nancy Frankel, David Crawford as Detective Jackson, Sarah Buchanan as Tina, Rebecca Yeager as Tiffany, Dave Speck as Jim, Dan Tinelli as Bill, Melinda Crawford as Jan, and David Binkley as Bradley Adler. All I Want for Christmas is Revenge was written by David Binkley. Music was written and performed by David Crawford. Theme music for WCRS Radio Stage is written by David Crawford and Tom Holman. WCRS Radio Stage is produced in Akron, Ohio by David Binkley and David Crawford. I'm Joe Calley, asking you to join us the next time we present WCRS Radio Stage.
Wow, Dave.
Yeah.
That's something, and that does swing us over to Christmas, which is coming up, a spirit of all that fun and nice stuff that we have no use for here at Neary House. We like the murders and the revenge and the stabbings and the killings. That's what makes
the shooting. The shooting, yes.
Yes. Yes, yes. Oh, you had to go and put a lump in my throat with that story. Thanks.
Well, it's better than a lump of coal, right?
Same thing.
Yeah.
A lump is a lump.
I'm very proud of many of my stories. That's one I'm very, very proud of, yes.
You should. That's really cool. Well, it is Christmas time coming up soon, and we've got some wonderful programming for you, including next week, Friday, starting at 8:30 Eastern, as always. We'll be filling up your Christmas stocking with little treats like Phil Harris and Alice Faye, in which Jack Benny plays Santa, Fibber McGee and Molly, and, of course, Jack Benny. Jack buys Don a gopher trap. That ought to be cool.
and I tell you, who gets spotlighted in this? The few lines he gets, the one and only Mel Blanc. It's just steals the show. He absolutely steals the show.
I think I've heard this one actually back when I was getting some free satellite a few years ago. And it's a funny tale. And Mel Blanc is, I believe, he's the clerk at the store, isn't he?
Right. Well, but there's several times. Once he bought the Don a wallet, and another time he bought him some cufflinks, and another time he's buying Don Wilson. What happens is he always changes his mind of the particular type of thing that he's buying for him. So drives the poor clerk insane. Yes.
Then on Saturday, we're back with some Christmas capers. That's 1 week from tonight with The Shadow, The Stockings Were Hung, and Nero Wolf, The Slaughtered Santas. That sounds cheery.
Ho, ho, ho!
And then a special, very, very special holiday treat, a holiday family radio drive-in with the Lux Radio Theater, radio adaptations of The Wizard of Oz on the Friday night, and then 2 weeks from tonight, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And there will be some original cast in these, as Radio Lux Radio Theater was wont to do.
And also a couple of the original songs as well.
Yep. Now, Dave, here's that Gar is up and running, right? So Horrible Horrors in just about 5.5 minutes. That's over in Facebook land, and the link that Gar puts up there. And then tonight at 11 o'clock on the Vortex.
Spaceship One, Episode 2. Now, this is the cool one. This is the historic one. This is the one where we bring in the same video skit Houlihan, Big Chuck, and Little John, who had not appeared together in a new video skit for 40 years.
Wow.
Also in them is also a longtime associate, Jim Szymanski, giving the introduction. And, of course, the one and only Robin Sobota, if you're from Northeast Ohio. All these names mean something for you. And actually, Robin Sobota did a couple of national programs, and originally not from Northeast Ohio, so she's been she's known in many places. And to have all of these guys wrapped in to one episode is really, well, let's just face it, Dale knows my show. My show is so much tailored after Big Chuck. Big Chuck is my idol. And he is I not only do I model my shows and my skits and something after what, you know, I would think, what would Big Chuck do? I got to work with him on this. And the greatest thing is, you know, of all the things that Chuck has done for over 60 years in local television, this is one of the very few things that he performed that he didn't write.
Wow.
So
that's
for
interesting
me,
to know.
For me, that makes it even that much cooler that I'm working with my idols, trying to
That's
keep
right.
my head on straight. So,
catch up on a lot of Cleveland legends tonight on the Vortex at horrorhost.net at 11 o'clock. I'm going to try to make it myself. I don't know. we'll see what happens. But
yep, I'll definitely be there. And hopefully, you know, I'm going to be at a Gar show for a while. And then I will turn over at 11 o'clock there, and I'll go back to finish off Gar's show, as Foggs did and the GGSI paper did as well last week. And also on Monday, one of our Christmas specials will be on the Vortex, 9 p.m. It is the great Rupert the Great. Rupert the Great. And I present a bunch of weirdness Christmas memories. In that particular one, and continue to lock myself out of my car at the same time. So,
that'll be a lot of fun. That's Monday night, also on the Vortex at horrorhost.net. And I'm going to give it one more try, but I've been having connectivity problems. I don't know why I can't hook up to Gar's show. I have been having troubles, and I'm me not smart when it comes to computers.
The entry net can be a difficult thing. Yes, it can.
It doesn't love me. But who knows what happens. Thank you, everyone, for listening tonight. I hope you got your taste of revenge, whether you're listening live, like Fugsbane, or in the archives, like, I don't know, I can't see it now, because this is now, and this is that.
That's the archive, yeah.
Yes. But again, don't forget to join us next week for some true holiday joy. And we're trying to dream up what we're going to do for New Year's Eve. We don't know yet.
Yeah, we got some plans, but we're still working that out.
We're thinking maybe one thing, and then maybe another thing, and maybe a different thing. We'll have our minds made up soon, and we'll share.
Yes, and we'll help you ring in the new year. At Erie House Radio.
Indeed. With some cool, refreshing adult beverages.
Well, we'll have it anyway. I don't know about you, but we'll have it. Yeah.
I don't know. Might put me right to sleep. Maybe permanently.
Happy new beer, yes.
Happy new beer.
Yeah. So much fun. Coming. So much fun here and so much fun coming as well.
It is. So we'll see you next week, Friday at 8:30 Eastern.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
Not only him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
This is the opposite of last week. I left too much time left. Thank you, folks. And good night. Blowing out that candle.
Yeah, that's one. Must be one of those trick candles. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, indeed.
She kept lighting that back up again.
It did. Pretty good night. Didn't even get molested by cats, as I usually do.
Yeah, mine must be downstairs, too. I'll have to go down.
One of them's sleeping. I don't know where the other guy's at. The one that...
For those of you in the archive, I'm also working on, we just filmed this week, and our next Weirdness Really Bad movie show. And we went up to Burke Lakefront Airport inside a museum called the International Women's Air and Space Museum. So that's where we were tonight. So or this week, and working on that this weekend. And, hopefully by Tuesday night, it's my plan to have that movie all completed.
Is there a special place that they have at that museum for Alice Cramden?
They have a lot of things about NASA and the moon. I don't know if they had Alice there or not. Yeah.
Because well, maybe Ralph that, never carried through on his threat.
Pow, to the moon. You know, in the first place, this was so much cooler than I thought. Even all my cast members said the same thing. It's so much cooler than they thought it would be. It really was a cool thing. We did our parts, and we brought in the executive director. We did four small segments, short segments with her. And it just was a really cool experience. And it just felt so good to get back into. I haven't since March, when I started really concentrating on Spaceship One. It was the first two-hour movie show we've done since then. So
good.
Felt good to get back out there on location again.
The World Was Due, another Weirdness Really Bad movie, and that's coming your way.
Yep, that's my revenge.
Yeah. I'll get revenge. I'll put it on a new show one of these days. I don't know, grumble, grumble. Grumble, grumble, grumble. Well, you know that little thing I'm working on.
Yeah,
it'll be a fun little feature we'll throw on here. But things that make you wonder.
Yeah.
What would it be like if?
Yeah.
It's the only hint.
It's
the only hint I'm given.
To be honest with you, on this show we aired tonight, it was I surprised myself the fact that I almost acted there. I thought I did a pretty decent job, and
I think you did a great job, Dave. As did the whole cast. I mean, the little girl, she was cute.
Oh, yeah.
The special guest player you had, you'd never know that he hadn't done this before. You know, yeah, you take a lot of credit with the editing, but I think the gentleman himself, executing the lines, edited or not, he did a fine job.
He did. Absolutely. Absolutely. Kind of was if there was such a thing as a bucket list to be on a radio drama, we got to help fill that for him. So
you're amazing, Dave. You are amazing. To paraphrase Fogsbane earlier, you're amazing.
Yeah. Well, so is Miracle Whip. What the heck?
Hey, Miracle Whip is good stuff sometimes.
Yes, it is.
So we'll let folks maybe run on over to check out Gar, the ghoul.
Yep, I'll be heading over there myself. He's probably got a musical interlude going right now, as he does at many of the beginning of his shows, and then we'll head into the show. I've offered one of my shows as one of his pre-features one of these times. It won't be during Christmas here, but I'm... We'll see if he wishes to do that or not. That would be cool. Him to have a pre-feature of a Spaceship One. That would be cool.
Well, I will do my best to fight off the Sandman.
Well, good luck, my friend. And
then perhaps I'll see you on the Vortex at 11.
Very good. Or maybe on Monday. You never know. But for now, I guess that's...
Monday's easier. 9 o'clock is no big deal.
It is for me some nights. But anyway, the one guy who always can stay up late, maybe we could have Mr. James Durant say good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say goodnight. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and it could think it too. Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Monster, sex, and rock and roll!